In this session, we are going to study the recovery of the Jewish people after the destruction, after the Churban Bayis Sheni. Because the great revolt and of the Jewish people against the Romans and their failure, which resulted in the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, was a heavy blow to the Jewish people, as well as to the towns and villages in Israel. Thousands were killed in the campaigns, and many towns were burnt down or razed, either in the course of the war or as acts of vengeance and intimidation. According to Josephus in the Jewish War, he writes that the number of those that perished during the whole siege was 1,100,000, which means over 1,000,000. Agriculture suffered most as the areas in the hills and plains that had been planted with fruit trees lay waste. However, the demographic and economic impoverishment of the population did not last. The Jewish people of Israel were not reduced to total devastation. Not only were the Jewish people able to wage a great war only one generation after its destruction, but the population had to a remarkable degree recovered its numeric and economic strength by the end of the first century. Many of those who had been captured in the war were redeemed by their brethren in Israel or in the diaspora cities in which they had been sold as slaves. Others regained their liberty in different ways. Some settled in the places of their exiles, while others returned to their homeland. Even those that had been conquered and razed to the ground, even those towns that had been conquered and razed to the ground, did not disappear. For example, Yafo was by the beginning of the second century flourishing. Yerushalayim and En Gedi also returned to life in the course of time. However, the nation was in serious political, economic, and spiritual straits. Now, every Jew had to pay a tax of 2 drachmas as a contribution to Jupiter Capitolinus, the head god of Rome, instead of the half shekel that they had been accustomed to paying to the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash. Based on the Roman conception that the gods of a conquered nation also became subject to Rome, and that since the gods of Rome had defeated the God of Israel, the revenue of the temple, of the Mikdash, of the Jewish people was now the right of the conqueror. That is why this tax was levied against all Jews, not just those living in Israel. And the tax was not so much a financial burden as it was a humiliation. Now, the ravages of the war, the conquest of Yerushalayim, and the loss of the Beis HaMikdash meant that the institutions that had led the nation, the Kohen Gadol, the Sanhedrin, in the Lishkas HaGozis, in the Mikdash, no longer functioned, and the result was paralysis and confusion. Additionally, only in the Beis HaMikdash was the shofar sounded when Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos, and only in the Beis HaMikdash was the lulav carried in all 7 days of Sukkos, whereas in communities outside Yerushalayim it was carried on the first day of Sukkos only. The Jewish people were also persecuted for observance of their religion. For example, Josephus writes, and the large Jewish community of Antioch, the Roman governor assisted the inhabitants of the city who forced the Jews to commit idolatry and violate the Shabbos, and thus the Sabbath ceased to be observed not only in Antioch, but in all the cities of Syria. However, before the destruction, the focus of religious life had to a large extent shifted to the synagogue and to Torah study, to the observance of mitzvos and to charity. Now, one of the leading sages of Yerushalayim before the destruction, one of the chief Pharisees and the spokesman of the Pharisees in its disputes against the Sadducees, was the deputy of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and his name was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai began to rebuild Jewish life in Yavne, and he reconvened the Sanhedrin there. He began to proclaim new moons and leap years from there. The practice of sanctifying the new moons was in itself sufficient to turn Yavne into the center of leadership for the entire Jewish nation. However, only a small proportion of the sages followed Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Yavne. Many of the leading Torah authorities who had been outside Yerushalayim during the siege or who had survived the fall of the city were absent from the first generation of Yavne. Rav Tzadok and Rav Elazar, two rabbis of priestly origin, Rav Dosa ben Hyrcanus, Rav Yehuda ben Bava, Rav Nechunya ben Akana, and Nachum Ishgamzu were active in the days of the Mikdash and were to be active at Yavne only after the time of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Even of his closest five disciples, only two, Rabbi Lezer ben Hyrcanus and Rishu ben Hananya, remained with him in Yavne. The others went their own way, including his senior and favorite Talmud, Rabbi Lezer ben Arach. One historian suggests that most of the sages could not forgive Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai for leaving Yerushalayim during the siege and surrendering himself at the emperor's mercy. Rabbi Gamliel, who later carried on the dynasty of the Nassim, because he was a descendant of Hillel, who was a descendant of David HaMelech, so Rabbi Gamliel enjoyed the renewed cooperation of the sages. However, the fact that many Torah authorities did not follow Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Yavne does not detract at all from the greatness of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's work in laying the foundations of the national center that developed in the following generation. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tried to move forward with all aspects of religious life despite the loss of a Beis HaMikdash. Now, once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, you could take one of two different positions. You can take the position that we have to simply mourn the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. We should engage in mourning practices, Zecher LaMikdash, to feel sorrow over the absence of the Mikdash. Or we can take the position that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, but we have to get up and we have to strengthen ourselves and we have to replace some of the rituals or the ceremonies that existed in the Beis HaMikdash, even though there's no Beis HaMikdash now. In other words, we have to get up and we have to strengthen ourselves and just move forward and really excel in practicing Judaism even without a Beis HaMikdash. So the first approach, that we just have to mourn and be in complete sorrow over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, can be found in a famous Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Samach Amud Beis, which states that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the second Beis HaMikdash, Rabu Purushim B'Yisrael Shel Lechol Basa V'Shel Lishtosh Yain. Many, I guess, Pharisees, the separatists, did not want to eat meat or drink wine. They said, how can we eat or meat or drink wine? We used to eat meat when we offered sacrifices on the Mizbeach. And so how can we taste meat now? How can we drink wine now? Wine that used to be used for the Nisuch HaYayin, for the wine libations on the Mizbeach, and now we don't have it? How can we taste meat or wine anymore? And they said this to Rabbi Shua ben Hananya, and he said to them, okay, so you shouldn't eat bread. Because why? There are no more menachos, no more flour offerings. We shouldn't have fruit anymore because there are no more bikurim, bringing the first fruits. We shouldn't have water anymore because there's no more nisuch hamayim, no more water libations. So there was a group that felt that we should engage in extreme asceticism. They were so devastated and almost paralyzed by the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. This would be in contrast to what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did. He tried to move forward with all aspects of religious life despite there being no Beis HaMikdash. So for example, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbos, they would only blow shofar in the Beis HaMikdash. But as the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, Perek Daled Mishnah Aleph states, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decreed after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they would blow the shofar at every place that had a Beis Din. There was a debate whether it was just in Yavne or in every Beis Din. And the goal was to alleviate that sense of loss of no Beis HaMikdash. He also made a rule which is found in Masechet Rosh Hashanah Perek Daled Mishnah Gimel that initially the lulav was only taken outside the Mikdash for one day, but with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, he ruled that the lulav is taken in outside the Beis HaMikdash for 7 days to commemorate the Beis HaMikdash to alleviate the sense of loss. When the time is ripe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai leaves Yavne, he steps aside, and Rabban Gamliel, who came from the lineage the descendant of, is descendant of the Hillel Hazaken, descendant of David HaMelech. So he is formally installed. Probably it only occurred at the end of the Flavian dynasty in 96 CE, because probably, some historians suggest, no Flavian would have permitted a member of the house of Hillel to assume any public position, let alone be the head of Yavne. Rabban Gamliel's era was different than his predecessor, in that wide circles in Israel and in the diaspora acknowledged the authority of the Sanhedrin. During this period, the emissaries of Rabban Gamliel traveled throughout the diaspora to answer questions, provide religious guidance, and collect charity. Some of the leading rabbis of that area are names familiar to us: Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Kiva, and Rabbi Yishmael. The goal of Rabban Gamliel was to achieve unity and consolidate halacha, since there was no base hamikdash to unify the people. This is reflected in a line that Rabbi Gamliel says in the Maseches Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis, where he says, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the World, you should know that I only engaged in my behaviors, and we'll see what those behaviors are. He took some very strong steps. Why? Lichvodcha, for Kadosh Baruch Hu's honor, Shelo Yirbu Machlokos B'Yisrael. So there shouldn't be division amongst Yisrael. There's the Tosefta in Sanhedrin, Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph, describes how there was a mechanism to resolve disputes until the time of Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, the students of Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. During this first century of the Common Era, when there was Hirbu Machlokos B'Yisrael, there was the... they persisted with their different worldviews. Nowadays, it's common. We have Ashkenazim, Sephardim, Misnagdim, Hasidim. It's common to have different people with different practices. That wasn't the case in the time of the Jewish people, in the time of the Second Beis Hamikdash, until the students of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. They each had their own separate views and their own separate halachos, and there was no consolidation of halacha, no agreement. But Rabban Gamliel felt we need to consolidate halacha. And in fact, the Tosefta Maseches Edios, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, explains, Mishenichnesu Chachamim B'Keren B'Yavne, once the sages entered the Keren B'Yavne, then there was a decision that we need to create a singular view, and we're going to begin with Hillel and Shammai. We're going to, and Maseches Edios is all about discussing the debate between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, and the votes as to who we're going to follow, and the rulings. And at Yavne, the halacha became accepted like Beis Hillel. There is a dispute, or there are different versions to understand why the halacha was like Beis Hillel. The Talmud Yerushalmi in Maseches Brachos, Perek Aleph, Halacha Dalet, states that a baskel went forth, a voice from heaven went forth and said that the halacha is like Beis Hillel. In the famous story of the oven of Achnai, the Tanur Shel Achnai, there Rabbi Yeshua says, we don't paskin like a baskol. So the question is how you reconcile the Talmud Yerushalmi, which says that we use the baskol to say the halacha is like Beis Hillel, and yet in the story of the oven Shel Achnai, when Rabbi Eliezer disputed the sages, and he had a voice from heaven saying the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, how come there Rabbi Yeshua said, we don't follow baskol, we follow by the majority? So there are different ways to resolve this, these two different approaches, the Talmud Yerushalmi versus the Talmud Bavli. Perhaps some Rishonim want to say that maybe the Baskol was only only came forth in the Tanur Shel Achnai story for Rabbi Lezer's honor, but really the halacha is not like him, or maybe we don't pass him like Rabbi Yeshua, or maybe there's a difference if it's one person, Rabbi Eliezer, against the majority of sages. In that case, we follow the majority, even if the individual is supported by a baskol. But if you have two different groups, a group of Beis Shammai, a group of Beis Hillel, then who do we paskin like? So then you listen to a baskol. But it should be noted that in the Tosefta, Maseches Sukkah, when it describes that we follow Beis Hillel, There it does not mention a basco. Be that as it may, many of us are familiar with the line in the Mishnah, Meseches Brachos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, where Rabbi Tarfon said that he paskin like Beis Shammai, that interpreted that the way we recite Shema, Kriyat Shema, is different in the morning and the evening. In the morning, we recite Kriyat Shema when we are walking, and at night, we recite Kriyat Shema when we're lying down. B'shachvacha, when we get up, when we're walking, then, or at least when we're standing, then in the morning we should recite Kriyat Shema when we're standing, and at night we should lie down. That's b'shachvacha. That's at nighttime we recite Kriyat Shema. Beis Hillel rejects that opinion. Rabbi Tarfon followed Beis Shammai's position, and the Mishnah says that Rabbi Tarfon found himself in danger, and the Amrulo, the other sages, said to him, you should have died, as it were. You should have been punished. Why? Because you did not follow Beis Hillel's ruling. In other words, there was a decision that we have to unify halacha, and we have to follow Beis Hillel, and anyone who doesn't, it's bad things will happen to him. And in fact, again, this is the famous story of the Tanur Shel Achnai, which is found in Maseches Bava Metzia, Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, where Rabbi Eliezer and the other sages were debating about the ritual purity of some kind of makeshift oven. Rabbi Eliezer says it was tahor, it was ritually pure, the Chachamim, the other sages said it was tameh, and Rabbi Eliezer tried to bring all the proofs in the world. The sages didn't agree with him, and then he caused all these different miracles to happen, of a carob tree be uprooted to prove that he was right, or that the channel of water would go in a different direction, or that the walls of the Beis HaMedrash should fall down, and even a voice from heaven came down and said, the Lachazak Rabbi Eliezer. But the end of the story is that the Chachamim said, or Rabbi Yeshua said, we don't follow a baskol, and unfortunately, he said, the Torah is not lo b'shamayim, the Torah is not in heaven. Rabbi Eliezer persists in his position. In other words, he feels MS. I think the MS, the truth, is like me, and that is more important than having one unified halacha. And because of that, Rabbi Eliezer is excommunicated. Again, understanding the context in which this story took place is very helpful now, because the goal of Rabbi Gamliel during this time is to achieve unity with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. No Beis HaMikdash to unify the people, but we have what? We have Torah to unify the people, so we need one unified halacha, and we're following Beis Hillel, we're following the Chachamim against Rabbi Eliezer. Now, Rabbi Gamliel dealt very severely with the rulings of individual rabbis in his campaign for uniformity in halacha. And with respect to this, many of us are familiar with his disputes with Rabbi Yoshua. He had a different view about the calendar, about the new moon, than Rabbi Yoshua. And he told Rabbi Yoshua, this is found in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Tes, he tells Rabbi Yoshua, when you think it's Yom Kippur, according to your calculations, I want you to come to me with your staff and your money. So you're violating your own Yom Kippur, because you're deferring to my position. And then in Maseches Brachos, Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, the Gemara tells a story where Rabbi Yeshua has a different view to Rabbi Gamliel about whether Mariv is an option or an obligation. Rabbi Gamliel finds out, and then he embarrasses Rabbi Yeshua publicly. The people have enough of this, and they throw Rabbi Gamliel out, and they throw him out, and they replace him with Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. And this is when the famous story happens, that he asked his wife, if she take the job. She said, they're not going to respect you because you don't look old, you don't have a beard. And miraculously, he grew a beard at night. And that's why he says, Hare ani kiven shivim shana. I'm someone who is like 70 years old. Because why? Because he grew old in a very short period of time, miraculously. In the course of time, Rabbi Gamliel was reconciled with the sages. He comes back, he returns, and Rabbi Gamliel then becomes the leader, the Nasi, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah remains his deputy. And 3 out of 4 Shabbos of Rabbi Gamliel gave the drasha, and 1 out of 4 Shabbos Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah gave the drasha. During the Yavne era, from the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash until the Bar Kokhba revolt, many steps were taken that were to have a decisive influence on the structure of the nation. As the sages were able to gain control over the different groups and trends that were competing within the nation, sects such as the Tzidukim or the Essenes essentially ceased to exist. Additionally, decisive steps were also taken to cut off Christianity from Judaism. Judeo-Christian sects increased their missionary efforts on behalf of conversion after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, because to them, the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed had confirmed to them that out with the old and in with the new, that the Jews are the old Israel and we're the new. We've been chosen, the followers of Jesus have been chosen. Why? What's my proof? Because the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Judaism, however, defended itself vigorously against inroads on the part of the Christians by refraining from all contact with them, and by measures designed to strengthen belief in the eternity of the Torah and its mitzvot. One such measure was the insertion into the Amidah prayer of an additional 19th bracha, the Birchas Haminim, which is directed primarily against the Judeo-Christians. We found in Brachos, Daf Chav Ches Amid Beis, Shimon HaPakuli, Histir, Shimon Esrei Brachos, the thing Rabbi Gamliel, Al-Tzedek B'Yavneh. So he established the 18 blessings in front of Rabbi Gamliel in Yavneh. And Amar Lahen, Rabbi Gamliel, Lachachon, Klum Yesh Adam, Shiyodeh, Letapin Birchas Haminim. At that time, in Yavneh, Rabbi Gamliel asked the Chachamim, does someone know how to establish the bracha of Haminim? This is the bracha against the Judeo-Christians. And that's when Shmuel HaKatan established this bracha. This takes place in Yavneh to exclude the Judeo-Christians from the synagogue. Because if you walk into shul and someone recites a blessing basically to curse you out, you're not going to want to come to shul. So now the Jews are cursing out the minim, the heretics, meaning the Judeo-Christians, to kick them out of shul because no one wants to be cursed out when they come into shul. At the academy and the Yeshiva of Yavne, ceremonies were developed to adapt to the fact that certain holidays could no longer be observed by Aliyah LeRegel, pilgrimage to the Beis HaMikdash Yerushalayim. For example, it was determined that even though there's a mitzvah to eat matzah, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to eat matzah on the night of the Seder, but still, what about maror? Maror was only a mitzvah to be eaten with the Korban Pesach and the matzah. But nevertheless, the rabbis decreed that we're still going to eat maror, even on the night of the Seder. And we can't bring the Korban Pesach, but we're going to still have an elaborate ceremony on the night of Pesach. And eventually, a text is developed called the Haggadah. It's unclear when exactly it was finally developed, but that's taking place to try to replace what was missing without a Korban Pesach to celebrate Yetzias Mitzrayim on the night of the first night of Pesach. One of the great works undertaken at Yavne was a new Aramaic translation of the Torah called Onkelos, which reflected the interpretation of the Tanaim of the Torah. The outlook and legislation of the Yavne scholars reflected a pervading consciousness of the equality of all men and of the importance of all who have been created in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God. And that was unusual for such an outlook in that day and age. It reflects the notion of equality of all before the law and the care not to transgress the property rights or honor of any other individual. The Yavne group acknowledged no privileged group or classes. So just to summarize, after Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Gamliel succeeded in unifying the Jewish nation under his leadership at Yavne and often took dramatic steps to enforce his leadership. And there were also efforts to force one school of thought, i.e. Beis Hillel. During this era, the Tzidukim, the Sadducees, and the Essenes ceased to exist, and the Judeo-Christians separated themselves further from the Jewish nation. Additionally, the scholars at Yavne adapted certain ceremonies to the new post-temple situation, and they had a very progressive view from a social perspective. And this Yavne period, this revival in Yavne, lasted for over 60 years, at which point the Jews decided it's time to revolt against the Romans. And this we'll discuss in our next session why this happened and the tragic results of that revolt.